The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So this week I thought I would talk about the practice of dana, of giving. But I want to begin by kind of tying it to or reflecting back to what we talked about last week, which was intention. So I want to start by talking a little bit about intention before I start talking about dana. I'm going to come at intention from a slightly different perspective than I did last week also. So I think most of us have some sense or understanding that there's a very strong connection between what happens in our minds and what we do, our actions. That there's a very strong interrelationship between the two. If we are frustrated or angry, we tend to behave in ways that reflect that. So the quality of our mind impacts our actions, our choices, our decisions, what we do. If we are peaceful, if our minds are calm and serene, then we tend to behave more peacefully. So that we're very familiar with that direction of the interaction. I think in some ways we trust that direction, or we honor that direction in a way in our culture. You know, there's this kind of belief that if we're not acting according to what's happening in our inner world, then we're not behaving in a true way. You know, so that there seems to be a kind of an emphasis on that, behaving in line with the way we are feeling internally. And that can get us into trouble at times, especially if we're feeling, so, you know, experiencing some negativity. So I want to just point to the fact that this interrelationship between body and mind actually goes both ways. That if we behave in a way, if we're feeling something inside like frustration, but we behave in a way that is demonstrative of peacefulness, it can have an impact on our minds. It can turn around and kind of change the way our minds work. So this interrelationship between mind and body goes two ways. The way we are inside can impact our behavior, and the way we behave can impact our minds. And the point where mind and body meet is a factor called volition, very closely related to the intention I talked about last week. This factor of volition is a kind of a moment before action happens. And that moment we can know before we're going to speak, before we move, before we act. We can know that that's going to happen, and that's a kind of an expression of this volition, that we have this capacity to know what's going to happen before we take the action. There's that possibility exists in our mind. And accompanying that volition is an intention or a motivation. They're paired. Always with a volition to act, there is some kind of intention that comes with it. The volition itself is neutral. The intention that accompanies it gives it its what we could call an ethical spin. Last week we talked about the kind of ethical flavors of intention, those intentions that lead us towards actions that create affliction, and those intentions that lead us towards actions that lead us away from affliction, that lead us towards happiness. So all of our actions are accompanied by this volition and an intention associated with it. And this point of volition and the intention associated with it is how this bidirectional impact works. Mind impacting body, body impacting mind. The mind impacting body one is obvious. You know, if we're frustrated and we take an action out of that frustration, it moves out into our behavior. Now, if we're going to try to cultivate peacefulness, even if we're not feeling peacefully, we can cultivate peacefulness by behaving peacefully. But it does take a kind of a conscious connection with it, an intention to cultivate peace. That we are, you know, consciously behaving in that way in order to bring that quality to cultivate that quality. So we can cultivate peacefulness in our hearts by behaving peacefully with the intention to cultivate that peace. Even if we don't feel that peacefulness, as long as we have the kind of the aspiration to cultivate that quality in our hearts as we're behaving peacefully, that behavior will rebound positively on our hearts and our minds, and we'll tend to cultivate that quality. So our behavior can change our minds. And tonight I'd like to explore this interrelationship through looking at the practice of giving, which is the action, which is said to cultivate generosity, where the action of giving, the term for that, the Pali term for that we often we talk about here, the Pali term for giving, the action, the outward manifestation of action of giving is called dana. The inner quality that we are seeking to cultivate through the practice of dana, through the practice of giving, is generosity. And that quality in Pali is called chaga. So these two are interrelated, dana and chaga, giving and generosity. So the action of giving counters this stinginess, a sense of holding on to things, and cultivates this inner quality of generosity. If the intention in the giving is to cultivate that quality. So that's really important. I mean, it sounds perhaps like a fine point, but it is actually how giving cultivates generosity. You know, if we're mindlessly giving without really connecting with the intention to cultivate the quality, the inner quality of generosity, that giving is not going to have as strong of an impact on our hearts. So the Buddha defines generosity in a beautiful way. He says, or he talks about what is generosity. He says there's a case where one's awareness is cleansed of the stain of stinginess, living at home, freely generous, open-handed, delighting in being magnanimous, responsive to requests, delighting in the distribution of alms. This is called the treasure of generosity. So the description gives you a sense of the feeling. And I know you all know the feeling of generosity. You know, there's a kind of an open-heartedness, a connectedness that happens when the feeling of generosity comes. The feeling of generosity spontaneously wants us to connect, to offer, to support. And there's a delighting that happens in this. There's one teaching that the Buddha says that when we offer a gift with generosity, we experience joy before, during, and after the giving. We experience the joy of anticipating the gift, We experience the joy while we are giving. And we experience the joy in recalling the giving. So this joy can come with this quality of generosity. So we can't command generosity. You know, we can't command that quality. It's sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't. But we can cultivate this quality of generosity through the practice of giving. So this practice of dana, the practice of giving, is a foundational teaching by the Buddha. It's especially for lay people, it is kind of the first teaching that he gives in terms of what we need to do to cultivate our minds and to let go of the very powerful forces that keep us pulled into this round of suffering, the way that we continually kind of cycle through difficulties over and over again. So the training that the Buddha offers is a training of mind that supports a letting go of greed, aversion, and delusion. Supports a letting go of these qualities that directly lead us towards affliction. Qualities that lead us to act out of ill will, out of cruelty, out of wanting to have things. These unskillful intentions I talked about last week. So this training of the mind is a training that supports a letting go of greed, of aversion, of delusion. So this training that the Buddha offered, beginning in particular with a practice that is very, you know, straightforward of giving. So this practice of giving supports the cultivation of letting go of things we hold on to, this kind of stingy quality that we have. You know, oh, this is mine. I don't want to give it away. I don't want to. This is my thing. You know, I don't want to share it. You know, that kind of two-year-old mentality. You know, this is mine. I had a kind of a recognition of this at one point. I had this peach. This is just a simple, small example. But, you know, these little examples, they point to ways that we can really cultivate these qualities. I mean, there was a peach in my kitchen, and I love peaches. And this one looked like a particularly good peach. And a friend was coming over that night for dinner. And a thought occurred in my mind, oh, I could put that peach in a salad to share with her. So there was that kind of a moment of spontaneous wanting to offer this peach to my friend to share it. And the next moment was, that's my peach. I was like, wow, you know, it was just this sudden stinginess, this sudden stingy quality. And I had a little conversation with myself. I said, we can share that peach. So I did put the peach in the salad, you know, and I shared it with her. So, you know, these are small ways that we can counter this quality of stinginess. You know, this quality of holding on to things, which is greed. So the act of giving counters this very deeply rooted quality of greed in our hearts. It also actually is understood to counteract ill will. This one is interesting, and you could try this sometime. You know, if there's somebody that you are having trouble with, somebody that you're struggling with, you know, a person that you're having some difficulty with, and you would like to somehow bridge the gap, try offering them a gift. In the instructions for overcoming the difficulty being connected in the metta practice, this is in the teachings around the metta practice, when you're working to bring metta to those that are kind of difficult for you, the difficult person. They call it the enemy in the texts. You're trying to bring kind-heartedness, loving-kindness to the difficult person. It goes through a bunch of different ways to try to overcome the resistance to the offering the metta to a difficult person. Many different ways. And the last one it says, basically, if everything else has failed, it says, give the person a gift. That will work. So, you know, that you can try that. You know, it's very interesting to play with that. You know, the act of thinking about what they might be able to use. Now, again, this is with the intention to cultivate this quality of the open heart. We can't just, like, give the gift with the thought of, okay, if I give a gift, it'll make me feel better. You know, it's like that's kind of looking at it as a rote action. It's so important with giving to connect it with this intention, to connect it with the open heart. The manner of giving has to have an open heart and with the intention of connecting to this quality of generosity. There's this one teaching in terms of, you know, we sometimes believe that certain actions will, you know, if I just do these things, then that's what will help me. And we can kind of have that view around giving. If I just, you know, write out this check, or if I just give things, that will help me. But it's not just the action. The action itself doesn't have the power. What has the power is the intention behind the action. So our attitude while giving really makes a difference. How we connect with this action. When I was reviewing the Buddhist texts, the suttas around generosity, I found that quite a number of the texts that explore generosity talk about the motivation, the manner of giving. There's a couple of suttas that give a whole bunch of different reasons why we might give. I'm going to read some of these to you. Some of these are wholesome reasons, and some of them are less than wholesome. So this is just right out of the text, so I'm just going to read these to you. We might give out of affection, out of anger, out of stupidity, out of fear, because it's traditional to give a gift. We might give because someone else has given us a gift. We might give because we hope for a gift in return. We might give to gain a good reputation. We might give because it's considered a good thing to do. We might give because of altruism. We want to help others. We might give because it will make the heart happy. We might give because it helps us to counter the forces of greed, of aversion, and delusion. So it's important to actually notice the reasons why you're giving, to be aware of what your intentions are. And I think if you are aware of your intentions while giving, you'll find some mixed motivations. You will find, you know, some mixture of these in here. You know, you might find, well, you're giving a gift because it's traditional to give a birthday gift, for instance, and perhaps because you hope for that person to give you a gift on your birthday in return. And maybe also because there's actual joy in the giving. You know, so there may be mixed motivations there. So I'd like to suggest that, you know, the point here isn't so much to like beat yourself up for the less skillful motivations. You know, that it's very natural to have these other motivations, but to recognize that these other motivations, the ones that want something in return, or the ones that are kind of just acting out of rote, they're not really supporting this quality of cultivating generosity in the giving of the gift. So in looking at giving, finding a way to connect with the quality that is more open-hearted, the reason for giving that is more open-hearted. That's not to say that if you find mixed motivations, you shouldn't give a gift, but also see if you can connect to some of the more beautiful reasons why we give. You know, the giving that can just be truly a gift without expecting anything in return, just wishing for the happiness and well-being of another person. A gift given out of kindness, out of metta, or perhaps out of compassion if the person is suffering in some way and needs some support. So connecting with those motivations as well. And I think we'll find them all in our hearts. So if we can actually recognize those more wholesome motivations in the giving and consciously, you know, appreciate those, that will serve to cultivate this quality of generosity. And I would suggest to you that it will also bring more joy into your heart as you make that gift, as you offer that gift. Another sutta talks about kind of the manner in which we give. It says, it talks about how a person of integrity gives a gift. And it offers several different aspects to this. And so I'd like to go through each one. The first one, it says, a person of integrity gives a gift with conviction, basically with a sense of confidence that it supports this quality of letting go. It supports the letting go of the stinginess. It supports the letting go of aversion if you're giving a gift to someone where there's some difficulty between you. So that's the first reason or the first way you connect with, actually reflect on. I think this is pointing to a recollection or reflecting as you're giving the gift. What are the benefits of this offering? To recollect, actually consciously recollect the benefits of this action. You know, I think this kind of goes against our grain in some ways. You know, we think of giving selflessly means that I don't get any benefit from this. But when we actually give selflessly, we get great benefit. And so reflecting on the deeper benefits of the joy, of the, you know, the kind of purity of the connection, of the letting go of the stinginess, those are kind of deeper benefits that we get through the act of giving. So a reflection on that. The Buddha says a person of integrity reflects on those benefits. A person of integrity gives a gift with attentiveness and respectfully. So this is about like the relationship that's being created as a gift is given. So giving a gift, offering a gift in a way that does not in any way belittle or hurt the other person. Treating the person with respect and dignity as you're offering the gift. The next one, a person of integrity gives a gift, it says, in season, at an appropriate time. And this one, the way that it's talked about in the suttas is, it's a little bit, I don't know, it's not so clear to me exactly what it means. But I'll read it to you, and then I'll offer some of my own reflections on how I think it speaks to me. So a person of integrity gives a gift in season to a newcomer, to one going away, to one who is ill or in times of famine. So part of this, I think, is speaking to, you know, when somebody is in need, you know, giving a gift when somebody is in need, it's clear that, you know, one who's ill or in times of famine, there may be a need by the recipient. To a newcomer, to one going away, that perhaps speaks maybe to some cultural appropriateness. Essentially to honor the traditions of a culture. I also think it speaks to, you know, considering the appropriateness of a situation. When is it appropriate to reflect on, is it an appropriate time to offer a gift? Is this an appropriate situation? Is this gift that I'm offering appropriate for this person to receive in the company of the people that are here now? You know, that kind of reflection. Just consider where and how you offer a gift. A person of integrity gives a gift with an empathetic heart. This is, I think, speaking to compassion. And this, I think, comes most to the fore when we're giving a gift to someone in need. You know, that we don't give the gift, the gift, when we're offering something to someone in need, the kind of empathy that recognizes that we too might be in that situation. And it's only the vagaries of circumstance that make that person in need and not myself at this moment. And so, you know, to give with that kind of connection of compassion, the meeting of hearts that way. This last one, I think, is really interesting. A person of integrity gives a gift without adversely affecting oneself or the other. So we've talked a little bit about, in previous ones, about not adversely affecting the other, giving with attentiveness, giving respectfully, in a way not hurting the person offered to. So this is, you know, thinking about, is this gift, will this gift be can this gift possibly adversely affect the other person? And to consider, is this gift going to adversely affect me? So this, I think, comes down to looking at priorities. We need to consider this, that giving needs to be balanced with wisdom. So we need to understand, of course, that people have different, everybody's got different circumstances, different means, different resources, different capacities for giving. And we need to reflect on where and how to offer these resources. Some of these resources need to nourish ourselves, and some we can share with others. And so we need to look at the whole picture, the bigger picture of our flow, kind of us, like all of our resources can be considered a flow of nourishment in a way, that we can choose how to use our wealth, our time, our material goods to support things that we find meaningful, and to not do it in a way that adversely impacts ourselves. So, you know, this, I think, really, again, points us to looking at what are our highest priorities, what are our ideals, how can we give in line with our highest wishes. And in that way, also, I think we find that as we give, when we are offering something, whether it's financial support or material support or time, however we offer things, that if we're offering to support something or some situation that is in line with our highest ideals, that we in turn are nourished by that support. So reflecting on how you wish to use your resources. This can be a very profound and deep reflection. And when asked at one point, a king came to the Buddha and said, you know, where should I give? You know, how do I decide what to give to? And he had actually heard that the Buddha had taught that you should only give to him and his order of monks. But the Buddha's response to him was, you should give to where you're inspired to give. So that the inspiration, the connection with your aspirations and your highest ideals, that is it's a gift not only to the others that you give to, but also back to yourself when you are offering your time, your resources to things that support what you hope to have manifest in this world. So giving from a place of consciously reflecting on this, you yourself can feel nourished by those gifts. Consciously, skillfully directing the flow of your resources. So another way to incline the mind towards giving is to recognize that so many of our interchanges in life can be understood as giving and receiving. And they can be framed in this way of offering and receiving. And, you know, the receiving side is actually as important in a way as the offering side. You know, that to be able to receive with an open heart allows someone else to offer with an open heart. So many of our interactions can be seen in this light as a kind of a flow of offering and receiving. In very simple ways, even. The Buddha, again from the Buddha, he says, even if one throws away the rinsings of a pot or cup into a village pond or pool, wishing that the living beings there may live on them, even this would be a source of merit, not to speak of gifts to human beings. So here he's talking about a kind of ordinary action, you know, rinsing out your pot after a meal and throwing the rinsings on the ground. You can do that kind of mindlessly, you know, just throwing it out, or you can do it with the intention, the wish, as he says. The wish here is important. The wish, may beings benefit from this food that's being put on the ground. That will cultivate this quality of generosity. It will cultivate this openness of heart. So this simple, ordinary action that he's talking about here can be used to, you know, deepen this connection with generosity. So this framing our encounters with giving. So, you know, how can we take this teaching and put it into our lives? You know, we go out to dinner with friends and, you know, we pay for our meal. I went out to dinner with some colleagues of mine a little while ago, and as we were paying for the meal, one of my colleagues said, have you ever thought of the fact that, you know, when we are paying for this meal, we're actually offering a livelihood to the people that work in this restaurant? You know, our monetary system puts so many layers between us. But in a sense, you know, in a very real way, if we connect to the fact that, you know, that our actions there are conducing to a livelihood for the others, then we are connecting to this quality of, I think it's really an interconnectedness that we are meeting with. We're connecting with that quality of the way we're joined together. So there's so many ways that we can bring in this exchange and consciously cultivate the quality of generosity and kindness along with it. You know, the giving of kindness, giving kindness to people that we meet can be looked at as a gift. You know, going into the grocery store and being kind to the cashier, being respectful to the cashier, can be seen as a gift. There's so many different types of things. I mean, there's the obvious things that we give of money and material things. You know, our service. You know, that those things are the, you know, being a volunteer. Those kinds of things are the kind of obvious ways. But our conduct, the way that we act, can also be a gift. Being kind can be a gift. Behaving ethically is understood to be a great gift. As we behave in a mode of non-harming, as we behave with the intention of non-harming, we're offering a gift of safety to all of the people and beings that are around us. You know, the kindness, you know, it's interesting, you know, the practice of offering kindness. Again, you know, the gift of a smile, even just a smile, I found in my own experience is so many times repaid. You know, that, you know, taking a walk, one of my practices in the neighborhood when I'm taking a walk is to, if people meet my gaze, I smile. And I will almost always get a really lovely smile back. And it feels good. You know, it's really nice to get that smile in return. And at one point, I was even kind of watching to see how long the joy of that exchange lasted. You know, a simple smile with a stranger. It lasted about 30 seconds, 40 seconds. You know, it was pretty amazing. Something that simple can bring that much delight to the heart. We also offer our presence through our practice, through our attention, through our ability to meet our experience. The way we learn how to meet our own struggles, our own suffering, that the practice that we explore in our own minds and bodies of learning how to meet the suffering inside, when we can learn how to meet it and not be reactive in our hearts, we can offer that to others. We can be present for a friend who's in distress. And this, it can be a very powerful gift, this kind of presence. I've told this story before, but it was one of the clearest examples for me of how this presence can be a gift. A friend of mine was going through something quite difficult, and he was kind of going back and reliving some very challenging experiences and was experiencing a lot of distress in the moment. And as I saw this, I brought the intention, I've just got to be here. You know, that was what I worked with, was just trying to stay present, to be there with my friend. And a couple of days later, he came back to me and he said, "What were you doing?" I said, "I was just trying to be there, to be present with you. I wasn't really saying much. I wasn't talking to him. I wasn't trying to say, oh, you know, it'll be okay, you'll be okay in a little while. I was just sitting there. I didn't say much of anything. I just witnessed his pain, basically. And he felt it. He said, you know, it was amazing." And that really gave me a great appreciation for that power of just the presence. Just, that was a gift we can offer to the world, is the ability to witness suffering without flinching, without reacting. It's an enormous gift. And as my friend taught me, it is received, it is felt when we have that capacity. So this is a huge gift. Our practice is a gift. And I would like to leave some time for some comments or questions, so I'd just like to open it up now for thoughts or comments. Jen.
Thank you so much for the talk on generosity. It's appropriate. I really like in particular what you were saying about even though we don't feel on the inside perhaps generous, if we do the act with the intention of trying to cultivate generosity, that has some fruits. And I appreciate that because I actually recently just... a friend of mine asked me a favor, to do her a favor. And, you know, honestly, I really didn't... It was on the day that I go hiking, and I didn't really want to do it. But I couldn't not do it because the guilt of not doing it was worse than doing it. So I'm glad to hear that, you know, and I talked to myself and just said she really needs help, and... This is, you know, so I sort of talk myself into it, sort of like your peach example. Uh-huh. Like, yeah, okay, right. And so I'm just glad to hear that it does work on, it works on our insides.
It does. Okay. It does. It does kind of have that rebound effect. And we do need to take care to have some wisdom. I mean, if you know, I can imagine certain circumstances where a friend would ask for help and you actually had something... you know, that you really needed to do at that time and you couldn't do it, you know. So we need to have the wisdom. But it sounds like you thought about hike versus helping your friend and you realized, I need to do this, you know. So this is, so it came out of you in that way. And if you can connect with that, and even reflecting back, if you can connect with the wholesomeness of that wish to help her, That will support it.
Thank you.
It's also something you said reminded me of another thing, you know, that if you do feel this inspiration of generosity, act on it. You know, that sometimes we have a feeling of generosity, that we're a sense of, you know, wanting to do something or give something. And sometimes we hold back from that. We feel a little bit foolish, perhaps, or we think, oh, it's not, you know, and we make excuses. And, you know, at one point I had heard a teacher say this very thing, you know, if you feel this inspiration to act out of generosity, follow through. And one of the things that really surprised me, I mean, it wasn't like I was, you know, giving everything away, you know, it actually didn't happen that often. It's a little humbling to realize how rarely that sense came up. So when it comes up, act on it, you know, again, using wisdom around it. Any other comments? Yeah.
Yeah, I have a question. When you were talking about reasons, and thank you, reasons for why people give, you said you listed anger. I don't understand that.
Well, you know, the teaching, for instance, this is one way that, you know, the teaching that I had said around, you know, if you're angry, try giving a gift and see how it impacts your relationship with the person. That's one reason why somebody might choose to give a gift out of anger. Another, I mean, it might also be that you're giving a gift out of anger that's a kind of, I mean, from another spin to this whole thing, you know, you might give a gift out of anger that's a, you know, not a very nice gift.
Can I just say one more thing? You know, it's very...
Is that on? Is the green light on? It is on? Okay.
It's on. Mm-hmm. You know, I loved your talk tonight because I work in a fairly large office building, and every couple of years we do this thing called Secret Pal, and everybody puts their name in who wants to play and puts their name into like this little container, and then you fill out a little questionnaire about yourself, you know, your favorite color, favorite flower, things you like to do on the weekend. Mm-hmm. And then it's a big secret. So everybody goes and picks a name, and you don't tell anybody. And this runs for like 6 weeks. And the whole idea is to give a gift to your secret pal or a surprise or do something to make that person happy. But they have no idea who's giving.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And so I haven't played this game, well, in a long time because the last time I played, I didn't get any good gifts. So I hadn't played for years, right? But this time, I have a whole new kind of outlook on life these days, and I'm playing, and I am having a blast. And you are right. This young woman that I'm, you know, having all this fun with has no idea who I am. And, I mean, I just dropped a lemonade off at her desk while she was out. You know, she has no idea. I mean, just small things, just to show, just to give a kindness, just to let somebody know that, you know what, that they're worth something, that they're valuable. Mm-hmm. And it's been going on now for a few weeks, and it has changed me.
Uh-huh.
It's made me feel so much lighter and more joyful, and it does work. And we're kind of doing this now at work, and I'm really enjoying it. It's great.
So that's beautiful. I mean, I think what's happening there is, you know, again, it's kind of like that connectivity. You read the little questionnaire with all of their likes and what they do, and because of that, you have a little information, and you can, you know, get creative about ways that they might enjoy a gift. And the contemplation of that can lighten the heart, you know, and it is a connection. And the connection itself feels good, even if she doesn't know.
Well, we will find out at the end. But the other thing is that I don't know her that well. She works upstairs and in another department. But I feel totally connected to her. It's really funny, you know? It's true.
That's beautiful. Thank you. Thank you for telling us that story. Yeah. Yeah, behind you.
When you were telling that story, a couple of days ago, I was hiking and with a camera, and I ran into some kids, and they said, "Oh, you must be a photographer. Take our picture." And I said, my first thought was, "No, I'm sort of hiking." And then I thought, yeah, sure. So I set the tripod up and set the camera up and spent about a half an hour taking portraits. And it was great fun. It was just very, very rewarding.
So you, again, it's kind of like you saw the possibility for connection. I think this is one of the great rewards of generosity, is that it does connect us. And, you know, in such a beautiful way, you know, that open-hearted sense that we have when we're truly offering in a selfless way. I mean, it's like you weren't waiting for something back from them. You know, it was just an offering. So that's beautiful. So I'd like to close tonight by talking about, or just briefly talking about another form of generosity, and that is the offering of the benefits of our practice. This typical, what we typically talk about it, offering the merit of our practice. And, you know, for me this is not we typically say something like, may the merits of our practice be of benefit to all beings, or something like that. But, you know, I like to reflect on this a little more. It's an offering that we're making, in a way. Again, this is an act of offering. And I like to think of it in very concrete ways as I as I reflect on this. So, you know, for instance, this talk tonight, this conversation around generosity, perhaps you can think as you're going home, how can you frame your drive home as acts of generosity? You know, not stepping on the accelerator as somebody is trying to merge on the freeway. You know, just little things. You know, are there ways that you can, you know, kind of connect with other beings, even if they're not really seen? You know, they're all hidden in their little cars. You know, can you connect? You know, the offering of driving safely instead of rushing, being present for driving, is a gift to everybody around you. So, you know, framing your next actions in terms of generosity. So, you know, in this way, our practice impacts others. Because when we drive more safely, others are more safe. And so others benefit from our practice. So that's the way I kind of like to reflect on what it means to offer merit. That we offer the beneficial results of our practice. The beneficial results of our practice impact not only ourselves, but impact those we meet. And perhaps can ripple out and impact others. And so, you know, I reflect on this as I make this offering, and I try to frame it in a way that we can understand. So may the beneficial results of our practice together tonight be offered to support the safety, the welfare, and the happiness of all beings. May all beings be at ease. Thank you.